For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Goldbridge Saves Football Podcast as we review another fascinating Premier League weekend. Liverpool didn't even play, but were probably the big winners of the weekend. And they might be winning three times because Salah, Trent and Van Dijk have been offered new contracts. Jamie Carragher's come out with an outrageous statement. Why don't you like Mo Salah, Jamie? Putting Cole Palmer ahead of Mo Salah as the most influential player in the last 18 months in the Premier League. Man City and Arsenal bottle it. Are they still in a title race? Gary Neville says Man City aren't in it, and yet they're only a couple of points behind Arsenal. Man United are in crisis. We'll move on from that one. Chelsea are in a title race. Ange is in a mess. Brentford are supertastic at home and win again. And lots more to talk about. Is the relegation race becoming a little bit of a dead end? Will, talking about dead ends, bit of a dead-end weekend for you? Just sat watching Christmas films with your life?
No, absolutely perfect. Blues won away, 20 million down the drain. Jay Stansfield scores again, two at Barnsley. Fantastic week for my Premier League fantasy. And I just feel like we're still in this competitive Premier League, Mark. You've turned into Sir Jim as well. You've cancelled the Christmas party due to budget restraints. So unfortunately, you took a leaf out of his book. But apart from that, we're all good and we're all dandy.
The Christmas party's not been cancelled. Will and Noel could still go out on their own, but they won't go out without me, who is feeling a bit under the weather today. But there will be an alternative plan, whereas Sir Jim has no alternative plan. He just advises you go home and have a
Wetherspoons by
pot noodle and a wank.
It was the one by Old Trafford.
Yeah, Bishop's Blaze. Ooh, get yourself down
now,
there.
That would be
a good Christmas thing.
They should have a few cameras in there, and that could be a brand new Channel 4 documentary.
Let's fly into it. Lots to get into. Big weekend of Premier League action. I've always said Crystal Palace is a difficult place to go, and I've always said Fulham are the quintessential Premier League team, and yet both deliver in the title race. We'll talk about Man City and Arsenal shortly. Will was not happy with the offside in the Arsenal game. To be honest, I wasn't really. I'd like that to have been given just to keep the title race for Arsenal open a little bit longer. Although Chelsea have taken their place. Well, I spoke about this yesterday. I watched the game. Chelsea in a title race. Are they in it? Is it sustainable? I loved what Maresca said after the game, by the way. He basically said Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool won't slip up like Cucurella.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah,
bit of banter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything he's done this year seems like a touch to goal, hasn't it? Like We spoke about the squad situation, but every time you hear him speak, and then I think they were speaking about it after that, he's been speaking with Claudio Ranieri, and of course, what's he synonymous with? A dark horse sort of title win. So yeah, Chelsea are there. They don't probably want to be there in the conversation, but he feels like, you know, Eric Ten Hag, I never felt Eric Ten Hag was good with the press.
Yeah.
And for the sheer amount of
both
media...
press, pressing from the front and the actual press.
Up top. I've got germs now, haven't I? Already had it. But yeah, no, I just think he's been brilliant. Are they in a title race? You said about sustainability and longevity with this. The squad's there, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got two teams. One plays on a Thursday in the Conference League and one plays on a Sunday in the Premier League. So, hey, it's a crazy season. It could be a crazy result, but let's just say they're in there.
Nobody wants to be in the title race, actually. I was doing the watch along yesterday, and I can't remember. I won't name them. It's not fair, but let's just call them a Pratt. And they basically said, Liverpool aren't in a title race. Chelsea aren't in a title race. There is no title race in December. And I was like, and the rest of the chat sort of did the same. It was like, So what are we doing then?
Yeah.
what happens between like August and February? Everyone's just playing games for the laugh. Of course there's a bloody title race in December.
And obviously not a fan of the podcast, because Who'll Be Top at Christmas is such a quintessential part of everybody's Christmas plans going forward.
We've had it with Liverpool fans. They're not in a title race. They're not title favourites. We've now got Chelsea's manager and fans saying they're not in a title race. And what the truth of the matter is, both teams are massively ahead of schedule and don't want the pressure of a title race because they didn't expect to be in one, but you're in one. And what I love about this Premier League is that if you'd have said to me at the end of last season, come Christmas, Chelsea, come one and ye all, Chelsea and Liverpool would be the two going for the title,
and Man City and Arsenal wouldn't be in the top two, we'd have gone, what's going on there then?
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, is the main thing. But what did you think about, just to segue in what Carragher said, we're talking to Niall off air, who's our producer, and he said that Carragher has always hated Salah, and basically it's nothing to do with footballing ability. Apparently, Carragher was rolling into Anfield car park once and Salah just swooped in and took his place. Nice, and then went like that.
Yeah.
No, it's not. That's a joke. Don't clip that bit. But Niall did say that apparently Carragher has always said that he preferred Mane to Salah, which straight away is concerning because Mane was good, but Salah's better. But he's also come out with another pearl of will that Cole Palmer has been the best player in the Premier League over the last 18 months. What do you say to that? Because I watched the game yesterday, and as good as Cole Palmer is, and I think we're both a big fan of Cole Palmer, I actually thought Jadon Sancho was better than Palmer yesterday. So this whole like Cole Palmer thing, really good player, but I don't. Well, I'll have my say in a minute. What's your thoughts?
Well, look, you know, it's coming up to Christmas, and Jamie Carragher's given us a lovely present, a nice juicy talking point. And I think for me, the last 18 months, it's got to be Mo Salah, just because, like, even the week he's just had, like, you know, he scored, was it two goals and assist away at St James's Park? Like, he's just so consistent that it seems to get blindsided, even when he's doing the thing that he's supposed to do, which is scoring and assisting. I think the other week on Sky, they were like, he scored a goal, but look, his running numbers are down. We're like, what's the guy got to do? Like, his running numbers could be up and then his stats could be up. It just feels that there's always a caveat with Mo Salah, and I don't know why it is. You know, we've spoken about the Ballon d'Or and he should be up there so many more times. I just think there's, yeah, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's got to be down to a car park issue, because Mo Salah has been absolutely head and shoulders for the last 18 months.
You just get the feeling with Carragher that, you know, he could be organising this big charity event and, you know, it's doing really, really well. And then someone goes, I can't believe it, Jamie. We've got a real superstar of football to come and help out for the last hour. And he's like, great, who is it? Salah walks in. Shut it all down. Fucking stop it. What's he doing here? You know, he's really got it in for Salah, which is weird. He was having a pop at him a couple of weeks ago about the contract as well. Something's gone on Carragher and Salah. Get in the comments what you think it is. But absolutely categorically, Cole Palmer is a fantastic player. But I've played the game, I've watched the game, and over the last 18 months, Salah is better than Cole Palmer in relation to what he delivers, because I've seen Cole Palmer should not be held. This is what we do wrong in this country. We want to fast track players to a level of established players. And yeah, Cole Palmer is a really exciting player, and Chelsea are a very exciting team this year. But we just saw last weekend Mo Salah deliver, score and assist against Man City to go top of the title and sort of kill Man City off. Cole Palmer's not on that level yet, and Mo Salah is all about consistency. And I don't know what it is. There's this underlying thing with Mo Salah that we've championed a lot, that he's massively underrated. I don't really get it. There seems to be an underlying reluctance in the media and with some fans to not do this. I saw a clip on Sky at the weekend about somebody was saying, Hazard for me is better than Salah. And I'm like, look, everybody's entitled to an opinion, but the numbers don't lie, the consistency doesn't lie, and the quality doesn't lie. And I thought that even when you look at the assist against Man City last week and the one he put through to Diaz with the outside of his foot, just Mo Salah is on a different level at the moment, and he didn't even play this weekend.
Yeah, and you sort of touched on it there. I think when it comes to a young English player, the sort of praise goes through the roof, doesn't it? And then sort of when Cole Palmer was at Old Trafford, he didn't have his best game this season. There was a bit of a patch
there.
He was
quiet at Anfield as well.
But also, that's fine, because he's going to keep getting better, and he's going to probably be at a level where he can be as consistent as Salah is going forward. But, you know, and also, what do we like to do? We're having it with Jude Bellingham at the moment. No one's talking about Jude Bellingham scoring 5 and 5, 3 assists in La Liga, because he's on the sort of trajectory where it's going down because we built him up and now we need to knock him down. Cole Palmer sadly is going to get that because he's the flavour of the month at the minute. But yeah, Mo Salah. The chat sums it up in here. Someone, I think Strat said, Joy says Salah is underrated, and then someone called Strat, literally two sentences above, says Salah is overrated.
Yeah, this is the thing.
And that's just in our chat.
But it's also, I think, it's the modern phenomenon, isn't it, to create this society of either or. And
speaking of which, our new feature, Either Or.
Yeah, sponsored by
Snatch Pack.
Yeah, is all about how, you know, Cole Palmer's shit and Salah's good, or Salah's overrated Palmer's not. But I think I've seen Chelsea play this season, and in the bigger games, Cole Palmer really hasn't delivered.
Yeah.
Whether it be United, Liverpool, Man City, I think, on the opening day. And even yesterday, if you take the two penalties away, apart from he hit that air shot, didn't he, in the first half. He did really well on the Enzo goal, but I think Sancho's overall game was better, but still, he's a good player.
Yeah,
and,
he's
developing this. I don't get the whole either-or thing. Salah's obviously a better player than Cole Palmer at the moment, and Cole Palmer is very arrogant, so he'll believe he's probably better, which is part of the allure
it's
of
what
him.
You want,
it's
it?
A good thing to have, but yeah, I just don't...
But the thing is, people... So say we put that out as a clip now, people are going, what are you on about, you big fucking idiot?
Yeah.
Palmer is better. It's like, no, Palmer is on his way to be at that level. Palmer can have bad games, and also that's acceptable because he's a young player in a sort of experimental team that's moving forward. And you saying he had a bad game yesterday is not going, you think he's shit.
I don't think he had a bad game.
No, but like you, people
I just think
going,
Sancho had a
yeah,
better game.
Exactly. And I think if you're on the other side of that, you just got to maybe, you know, Palmer is up here and he can be up here, but just relax.
Yeah,
but
I mean, some people say about Palmer, he's all about penalties, and yesterday would sort of feed into that. But I thought, you know, that the most important goal in that game was the Enzo Fernandez equaliser, and that came from Cole Palmer's good work, which is quite similar to what Sancho did in the first half, and I suppose was ultimately bad defending from Spurs. But Chelsea, how high do we think they can finish?
I think they've got to finish in the top four now.
Oh, 100%. I
think,
there.
But I just think the way that they can manoeuvre their squad and have like a fully fit 11 after playing in Europe after... I know they've had a few injuries, but I just think even at the full-time whistle, the way Maresca was dealing with the players and the sort of joy
he loves it, doesn't
he? Yeah, he brought back in the way he speaks to the media. There's just, you know, football is very hard to get right, but I think there's some fundamental issues that you can really get right speaking to the media, having good squad balance, and the tactics obviously comes into that, and he seems to be doing really good on all of those so far.
I feel like Maresca's a bit like, you know, that Christmas turkey. You know, maybe Heston Blumenthal or Jamie Oliver or Gordon Ramsay have come up with this, you know, turkey where you bathe it in cherryade for a month,
yeah,
and then you cook it on a barbecue and it's absolutely amazing and everybody does it, and
you
then you sat there on Christmas Day,
yeah,
and you've done it and you're tasting it, it's like horrible,
yeah,
and you sort of like, you feel like you've been misled. I feel on Maresca, I've got to apologise even though it's not my fault. Last year when I was doing my Talk Sports show, some Leicester fans were calling up, even though they got promoted, going, yeah, I don't like Maresca, his football's really boring. And then at the start of the season, there was a few Chelsea creators sort of slagging Chelsea off and Maresca. So you sort of like go, well, they must know what they're on about. Leicester must know what they're on about. So I sort of thought Maresca was a bit of a bad appointment. And then we picked up on the podcast very quickly, and a lot of you listening did as well, that, to be fair, he's brought a bit of a rhythm. He's, you know, he's been quite strict. He knows what he wants. He walks up to the top of a buffet and he says, I'm having chips and a chow mein, and that's it. He's a no-nonsense manager, and he's doing really, really well. And I feel like there's almost a bit of an apology, because the soundbites coming out of certain Chelsea fans and Leicester fans was that, you know, he was a bit boring and a bit, you know, overrated. And actually, I think he's been pretty... If Slot wasn't in the game, he'd probably be getting a lot more as a brand new manager coming in.
Well, yeah, and I think as a relegated Premier League side, sometimes there's entitlement from fans that where, you know, you come down with the parachute payments in a Premier League team, and, you know, that's, you know, we're experiencing that in League One this year. There's no divine right to go back up. You have to play better football. And, like, I think they ended up with, like, 96 points anyway.
Mm.
So... Nothing. The jump to Chelsea, I think, shocked us all, didn't it? But like every issue he's been given, he's dealt with. The Sterling thing, like that was the, you know, we probably had it in our podcast title at the start of the season. Been dealt with. The squad, been dealt with. Media, dealt with. The tactics, he's got a first 11 sort of interchanging, even with like Caicedo playing right back in the role he played.
Should it have been a red?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, for me.
No.
Slow mo red.
I think based on another...
Carragher again, saying it was a red because he's a Liverpool fan.
No, no. I think it was late. Like, he was nowhere near the ball. Like, at least, you know, with the Bruno one, Bruno was going for the ball, so that got rescinded. Like, with this one, I think you could retrospectively probably give it a red.
The fact that Anthony Taylor didn't give him a yellow was hilarious.
Anthony Taylor yesterday looked very, like, assertive of himself. So
he's always been like that. I think I'm going to put Chelsea in fourth.
Well, who are you going to put above? Man City?
Man City,
above,
Arsenal and Liverpool, yeah.
Do you think, yeah?
But the way Chelsea got some really winnable games coming up, so...
But it's like even going forward, like, you know, you look at that, whatever you want to call it, if it's a false nine or a number nine, like that position in the middle, like you look at Arsenal and you go, it's Havertz and Gabriel Jesus. Like Nicholas Jackson's in really good form, and Nkunku's starting to come into it as well. And you feel with Chelsea, they could probably end up with fucking Victor Osimhen after the end of January. Do you know what I mean? Whereas Arsenal...
I think people... I mean, obviously, Sancho played well yesterday. I mean, obviously, as a United fan,
Sancho,
I'm not
Neto,
convinced. Madueke.
But
I think Neto's been a really clever signing for them. So almost not mentioned, but actually very good, obviously, if he can stay fit. I want to talk about the Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City trio. One didn't play, two dropped points.
What do you make about the wind?
But let's talk about Spurs first. I just want to say, I don't know what the latest is with Ange, and maybe you can tell us with that.
But he's on the phone, actually.
I've got to say, they lose the game 4-3. Chelsea probably should have won it more comfortably, I think. I think we'd all agree with that. But those two penalties that Spurs conceded, don't ever talk to me about sacking Spurs managers and then being the responsible when you've got a couple of clowns playing in your midfield doing that. I mean, the Bissouma one, I was almost in my head going, no, what are you doing? He's in the box and he comes sliding in like he's bloody Bret the Hitman Hart.
Nice.
Yeah. And then the Sarr one, I mean, Cole Palmer is heading towards the corner flag
he's
on the
done his
right
job.
Edge of the box. Yeah. And he thinks, oh, you know what? Time to go in hard.
Yeah.
He thinks he's a bloody porn star. Absolute joke. No, he wasn't trying to do that. He kicked him. But I just think, look, Spurs probably are going to lose that game anyway. But don't... I mean, the two penalties are just... And it's... You know what? I was talking about this with United. It's football IQ. I think the difference between Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal and Liverpool is that although they can have bad results, they don't make those sorts of mistakes because their players are... You know, there's football intelligence is becoming more important. It's becoming, you know, obviously talent and fitness is great, but the best players, it's about the IQ, the decision making.
Yeah, 100%.
And Spurs just don't have enough players with high football IQ. And I think when Romero and Van de Ven go off, that's a problem. But their two midfielders have cost them just penalties that if you saw them in League Two, you'd be like, "What are you bloody doing?"
Yeah, and look, I think you. This Spurs team, the key word for every team, if you're not doing well, is project, isn't it? Because it gives you that manoeuvrability. But Spurs have bought young, and they are going to have
Ashley Young, have they? Oh, yeah, they're finished now. Yeah. Oh, it goes from bad to worse.
They are going to have to improve with this team going forward, and that's going to take time, and it's going to take.
Think you'll get time?
I should hope so, because we said this with Ten Hag, and you got Amrin, so I think you've leveled up. Hopefully, and we'll come on to that. But if Big Ange goes from Tottenham, like Paul Merson was speaking, he was speaking about it from a counter-attacking perspective. He was like, you've got Solanke, Son, Kulusevski, Johnson. If you're 2-0 up, you've probably got the best attackers to counter-attack with. But when you actually break down those individuals and you compare them to where Spurs fans think that they should get to, like, where would you put that front three? Like Johnson, Solanke, Heung-min Son.
Seventh
or eighth. Mm. But they're probably going to end up seventh or eighth. Mm. Like the back four's young, the midfield is young, and then you've got Bissouma's still young as well, isn't he? You've got a young team, a young squad who are making mistakes. I mean, that's a very obvious statement to make, isn't it? So I just think Spurs have just got to be given time. The whole pressure is they've just not won anything in so long. So it becomes, the better you do, the level increases. I really hope they keep Big Ange.
I think the sense of self-entitlement at Spurs has always been the problem, and maybe Daniel Levy's a big factor in that. They sort of project that they're better than they are, and I look at it and I go, yeah, seventh or eighth, but Ange is obviously ambitious and he's become a sort of visible representation of the problem at Spurs because the manager is always the problem. But realistically, they're just Spurs, and who you know, if they get rid of Ange, where are you going to go? Marco Silva, Thomas Frank? It's like, you're not going to project yourself into top four just by changing your manager. And look at what's happened at United. Ten Hag probably needed to go, but Amrim's took 4 points from 12. The reality is, in the modern game, with the likes of Fulham and Brighton and everybody else, it's way too competitive now. You're not going to pick up 30 points against also Rans. You're going to have to play well every single game. And that's... before the game yesterday, I saw this and I thought, well done, Goldbridge. This is actually really good analysis.
Can actually imagine
before
you saying
the game
that
yesterday, I looked at the league table. For goals scored, Spurs were fourth. And for goals conceded, Spurs were fourth. But in the Premier League, they were 11th. Right. So I was like, you've scored the fourth most amount of goals conceded the fourth most. You should be in the top four.
Well, they said, I think they've won all their games. The games that they've won are by three or four goals.
And then one.
And then the ones that they've always conceded three or four goals when they've lost. So it's like, there's no one better who, because they've gone down the big, like you could get a big name and maybe, I don't know, Ancelotti gets sacked from Madrid and he comes in. Well, they've had that with Mourinho and Conte. It didn't work. They've had everything. Mm. The only thing they haven't done is
stability.
Kept a manager.
Stability.
And I think with him, at least there's someone there. Look, I do think he's got to adapt. Like they're saying, he's 2-0 up and you're fucking on the halfway line going. And also, you can get worked out so easily now because you've done the same thing for 18 months. Look, the star in the crown is they went to Man City and it worked. But then they played Ipswich, Crystal Palace and a Chelsea side that are doing well. It's just, I just really want him to do well because I think as a neutral, characters in the game.
The problem is they've lost to Chelsea, lost to Arsenal, both at home.
I don't feel like he's under. I feel like he's under pressure. I don't feel like he's going to lose his job. Do you?
I just don't know. Wait, look. At the end of the day, if they're thinking about sacking Ange and getting another manager in, that's going to cost you a lot of money. You'd be better off spending that money and saying to Gary Barlow and take that every home game for the next year. Can you just come and sing Patience at the start of the game? Because that's what they need. They need a bit of patience. They need a bit of patience, don't they? Anyway, let's talk about the traditional three in the title race, Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal. Liverpool didn't play at the weekend. One of my favourite clips of the weekend was, I think it was a Liverpool or Everton fan. I don't know why the game's been called off. Look at the weather outside my window and it was just all calm. But I don't know whether they were in like Swindon or whatever. And
I was anywhere
like,
these days.
Yeah, I thought, you know what? It got called off. You don't get that happening much in the Premier League, but obviously...
Is that woke
safety
nonsense,
first.
Was it?
Nah, I mean, bloody hell. The round my way, it was like power cuts here, there and everywhere.
Oh,
as I
fine.
Said, somebody was on some message group saying, anyone else power out? And I replied helpfully and went, no, I'm just sat in front of a nice fire watching Love Actually with a big bowl of Quality Street.
Love Actually with
and
your mum.
They said, can we come round? I said... ... nothing. But no, I thought that this happens quite a lot, doesn't it? If you're Liverpool, you're like, shit, we've had a game cancelled. We've got a big gap. It's nice, you know, you don't want games in hand. But then you come out of the weekend and to be honest, you'd snap your hands off at that. All right, Chelsea won, but Arsenal and City, the two that you're probably most worried about, both go and drop points. Yeah. I wouldn't have expected that. We spoke about it on Friday. I thought maybe one would. But I saw the Man City Palace game. I didn't see Fulham Arsenal. From a Man City Palace point of view, Palace were good for a point. They deserved it. It's just weird with Man City.
But also, how it just feels a bit meh. Like, it feels like the Man City result was almost sort of expecting it. Where, like, how far have we come in the space of 6 months?
Palace is a tough place to go.
Palace, no matter what happens in life going forward, Palace is always a tough place to go. But sort of just expected that, like... The drop-off in terms of just like the way you look at that 11 for Manchester City, you think like, I've been Haaland's biggest fan and, you know, he obviously still scored at the weekend, but I don't know. When you look at that, I mean, that Liverpool-Man City game the other week, for that first 15 minutes, it was literally men and boys, wasn't it? And
their mentality's just gone, isn't it?
I think they can have moments of brilliance, but the moments of brilliance are just going to get them at the moment just a draw at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, if nobody saw it, it was absolutely... If Man City had won that, it would have been by fine margins. I thought a point was a fair result for both teams, and that's just not Man City, is it? So some more points dropped. And then Arsenal-Fulham, I looked at those three games for Arsenal, West Ham away, United at home and Fulham away, and I said they've got to get 9 just to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
They take 7. I suppose the Liverpool-Everton game not happening sort of keeps them in there, but I don't put Arsenal back in. To the title race. I know they are technically.
It's in their next Premier League fixtures.
They've got some good ones, haven't
they? Yeah, they've got Everton at home. They've got Carabao Cup quarterfinal against Palace. Then they've got Palace away.
Tough place to go.
Thank you. Then they've got Ipswich Town and Brentford. And those are the next 4 games. But I think when you put it into context, those are the next 4 games over Christmas. They're 4 games before 1st of January. So, you know, it's all about when you're playing and who you're playing. So if they have to get 12 points from that.
And the problem with Arsenal is, and it's well documented, is that you look at the Fulham game yesterday, I think they had more possession, more shots. You look at the Man United game, it's set pieces again. They're not a set piece team. Like, I saw somebody yesterday saying they're just so reliant on corners, and then people don't realise it's not like a game of Monopoly where you play your corner card. Like, you win corners from having shots that get saved or deflected. So they're obviously attacking to win corners. But it is their best outlet at the moment. And why is that? I think it's... And this is why I don't put them in a title race. Look at 1-1 Fulham. They've not won the game. They've only scored 1 goal. What have we said so many times? I think if Arsenal had a Jacarez, an Isak, a Watkins, if they had a striker, I think Arsenal would be higher up the league because...
Do you think that's where they're going to get like... Because, you know, Declan Rice was that. We need a CDM. We've got Declan Rice.
Yeah.
It's just who... It's not going to happen in January, is it?
No. And I just don't think that Arsenal will win the league this year. And I think it will probably come down to the fact that they dropped silly points at the start because of red cards, etc. But also, I think they're going to drop more points between now and the end of the season. They'd almost, to close in on Liverpool, they'd almost need to go and win, you know, 90%, 95% of their games. And I think there will be more games for Arsenal where, like Fulham, probably should be winning it. but can't get the enough goals.
It just feels this year that like a draw at Fulham actually
is a good result.
Yeah, I think we're still judging the draw at Fulham in the season where Manchester City get 99 points, whereas this year, like, low 80s could win it.
No, it is a good point, but what my point is, my other good point is that because of where they are, they need to win that game. It's like Liverpool dropped points against Newcastle, yet Newcastle have beaten Arsenal and drawn with Man City. So Newcastle,
that's what Eddie Howe does, isn't it?
A point at Newcastle in the context of a 38 game season is not a bad point.
What did you make of Berbatov saying about Arsenal becoming the new Stoke City?
I just think it's easy headlines from people who need headlines.
Wow.
Yeah, I do.
And joining
It's like Gary Neville said that Man City are out of a title race, and I thought, what? So that means Liverpool have won the league then, because Man City are like 2 points off Arsenal.
Yeah.
So, and there ain't no way, if Arsenal are in a title race, that Man City aren't in a title race. I understand what you're saying in the sense that they look lost, then they don't look like they're going to turn it around. But if there was one team, if I had to say to you, out of Arsenal, Chelsea and Man City, you've got to bet your house on it. You haven't got one. but you know what I mean? You've got to bet something valuable on it.
Yeah. I haven't got anything.
Who would you say is going to do it? I'd say Man City have got the you're always going to go on history, aren't you? And Man City have got the history to just suddenly. I mean, look, Man City play Man United next week, beat Man United comfortably, and the confidence will come flowing back, won't it?
It just feels, we haven't seen it with Amorim yet under sort of the big game, but I feel like Man United could walk away with a victory in that, and then. Like, I feel like Liverpool's next Premier League game is Fulham. Then they've got Tottenham away, which, I mean, we don't know what Tottenham are going to get. Then Boxing Day, they've got Ruud van Nistelrooy's Leicester City. And then Lopetegui and West Ham.
So who's that, Man City?
This is Liverpool.
I tell you what, if Pep loses to Amorim at the Etihad next Sunday, I think, he's in big trouble.
He could walk,
yeah.
Yeah. I think that clip that came out of him was an outdated clip, wasn't it? That one when he nearly turned stuff, that fight with that fan.
I didn't think it was that bad anyway.
No.
I just thought, what's in that? But yeah, ultimately, I think it might be harsh, but I think Arsenal and Man City sort of bottled it at the weekend. When Liverpool aren't playing a game, you've got to get 3 points by hook or by crook. And I think that's why Chelsea did such a good job from 2-0 down. It's weird, isn't it? You know, Palace, Fulham, Man City and Arsenal can't win. Chelsea have got the more difficult game. They're 2-0 down to Spurs and they win 4-2. It's funny how Chelsea go and get the job done in a weekend where if you didn't win, you're sort of giving Liverpool a win.
Rodri did an interview with the rest of this football and he sort of semi-alluded to like he wants to be back before the end of the season. He'd have to be back January time for that to have any impact, I think, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
February?
They're a one-man team. Yeah, got no chance. It's not going to do anything for them anyway, is it? But I wouldn't be surprised if when Rodri does come back, they suddenly just start playing really, really well.
Yep.
Which again is not very good for Pep, is it? Because you'd sort of like then go, yeah, well, they are a one-man team.
But there you go, I bought them in.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like I can think of a sexual one there, but I'm not going to do it.
No?
No. Well, look, if you're married and you bring someone into the bedroom for your missus and she enjoys it, where are you going to go? I brought him in.
Yeah.
It's not you're not doing the job though, are you?
No. Well, you sort of no. I don't think that one works.
It does. They know. Anyway, let's talk Manchester United about talking about bangings.
Do you want to talk about that?
Oh God!
I need to bring somebody else into the bedroom.
You know what? I just was like, I look at that game and I go, 4 points from 12 for Amorim doesn't really bother me because he's a new manager. Yeah.
He's class with the media, isn't he?
Yeah. But I just look at United and I mean, look, oh God, you know, one of the players this season that's not been a problem. This is the problem with United. You think you're okay in one area and then
something happens.
Anana does that. And I thought Bruno
had a bad game. Wasn't it?
We didn't even move. It was windy, but it didn't really move.
No.
Even Gibbs White was like, I thought he was just going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Weird. And also a bit weird on the third goal, but conceding at both halves.
Two things, sorry, I've got problems with Manchester United that are not serious problems. Martinez, again, calling himself the Butcher when he gets out.
He doesn't walk out on the pitch going, I'm the Butcher.
No, but he has played into being called the Butcher, let's be honest.
Well, I would as well.
You would, but that says more about you than it does anything else. And then to be, I don't know what he was doing at the back post. And then whatever Hoyland's doing with this gladiator celebration, if you can drop him a message, you can't be... Yeah, he had a tap in from 8 yards to make it 1-1 at home to Nottingham Forest.
Mate,
I'm not saying let's go full Neville and Keane mentality, but
Mate, trust me, if you're starving and you haven't eaten for 2 weeks and you see a dirty old chip on the floor and you eat it, that's fine dining. He's just grateful for a chance to score a goal.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, great. But like, what's the old adage of like, you know, being like you've done it before?
The trouble is with the United is I was doing the United stand this morning and somebody put a message in saying Garnacho's the problem, he needs to go. And I was like, this is the problem. Like, you can't individualise it on Onana, Martinez, no. Rasmus, Rashford. It's a collective. I mean, we started with a team that was losing, and then he made, you know, Mason Mount, Rashford, Xerxes, they came on, did nothing. Like, this, we had £2 million a week on the bench. A week. Yeah. And then they came off the bench and were weaker than piss. It's just...
What did you make of... I'm sure you've gone into it, but like the Ashworth identifying Xerxes because of the data.
But you know what's what I find really weird about the Ashworth thing is that Ineos have come in and we were warned, like they didn't do a great job at Nice.
No.
And Ineos are really good at publicising their good stuff,
yeah,
and then they're really bad when things going wrong of sort of like going, yeah, they were the problem.
Yeah.
Like, they gave Ten Hag a contract and they sort of threw him under the bus, rightly or wrongly. But with Ashworth, no one wanted Ashworth. No one was talking about Ashworth at United. They went and it was a big, big, big news drop in January that they were taking him out of Newcastle, best in class. And then they bring him in and then he's being blamed for keeping Ten Hag at the end of May. And he's being blamed for Xerxes in June. He didn't start his job till July the 1st. Now, obviously, he might have been doing the job a little bit. But that he's not meant to be doing his job then. So how can you officially start going, yeah, he's at fault for that, when he wasn't technically even here? So I think Ineos just need to stop the blame game here. If Ashworth needed to go, he needed to go. But you brought him in.
How can you be like critical of a person's job in that role for like 5 months?
I know. He was on gardening leave longer than he was here.
How much has he made from like doing fuck all? Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors.
I don't know.
I just feel like Sir Jim really worries me. He feels a bit Richard Branson-esque of like, you know, PR. The last 4 flights from Dublin to New York have been cancelled. Well, PR. Like, I worry for Man United going forward under that ownership.
It's a bit like the Onana analogy, isn't it? You know, Onana's been a player that's played really well for us this season, has not been the problem, and then completely costs us a game at the weekend. And it's like, United, we know the problem's on the pitch, and it looked like we had stability off the pitch. You lose to Forest, and the big announcement is we're sacking our director of football. So not only are we shit on the pitch, but now our management team above is disintegrating as well.
And what was it? The reports that they were saying it's between like Berada and Brailsford are sort of taking over that, or like have been too hands on with that. You feel like there's too many cooks in the...
Well, the big question for me is that Dan Ashworth was at Newcastle. There's all sorts of stuff that he wanted Southgate. There's all sorts of stuff that his transfer targets don't align with Amrin. Well, that's fine. That's absolutely fine to get rid of him on that. But who was the person that went, let's go and get Amrin out of Newcastle? That's the person I'd be looking at.
Ashworth out of
Newcastle. That's the person. And if that's Brailsford, I'm sorry, on your bike. Because that's what he's good at. Nice. Bike stuff.
No, but in terms of that as well, Ashworth has come from Brighton and Newcastle, right?
It's too small.
No, yes, but like Man United are ironically in that position, but just comes with the heritage, doesn't it?
Mm.
So if you took the heritage away, Man United are a mid-table, lower mid-table side at the moment. You know, higher mid-table side where they normally finish, looking to progress and get into that title race. And to do that, you have to identify players that the top six wouldn't normally go for. So Ashworth actually probably is the right man. But then if you come into the gym and then you're like, everyone's, why have we not won a Premier League? It's like, oh God, let's get
rid of someone.
I really. Do you think they could? I wonder if there's anything they can do with Viana.
He's at Man City, isn't he?
Well, he's not there yet.
Is he not?
Well, I think it's done deal, isn't it? But like, he doesn't start until...
Unless Man City don't want him anymore. There might be something going on there. You never know. There might be... You might be right. There might be something that's sort of like, you can get Viana, so...
Yeah, go like... But then you've got... Then you.
Who is the director of football of Sporting Lisbon formerly, who's now going to Man City?
Yeah.
If people are going, who's Viana?
Sorry, yeah. I'm not saying use Viagra.
Altios, says Fartini. Simple, but effective. Anyway, yeah, so United, I mean, look, things aren't going to get any better at United anytime soon. We've got Man City away next week. We've got Liverpool away at the start of January. We've got Spurs away in the Cup. There's some difficult games for United. I think we've got Newcastle over Christmas, Wolves away. Very, very interesting.
I think maybe that they've not done it the way... Like, I don't think they've done it by design, but him coming in a quarter of the way through a season just means you can write off this season effectively, can't you, for him?
I think the fans are on board with that. I saw a bit of... Yeah, the trouble is, we spoke about the ex-player community. It reminds me so much of Liverpool in the 90s with Hansen and co, who they're just always so negative about Liverpool that it's very difficult to get... You know,
so, yeah,
and
break
they're,
it.
They're so influential. And even after the game on Saturday, you know, you had certain ex-players like Hargreaves and Tim Howard and Neville that going on, I don't know why he's rotating the team. And yet before games, he's saying, I'm rotating the team because of fitness. Like, you know, they can't play as much. So you just got to be careful of that. But most Man United fans, I think, are on board.
What did you... We've not convened since Gary Neville did his watch-along.
Oh, last Wednesday.
Yes.
Obviously... We were quite open about them doing it, and in the sense that, you know, we were nothing to do with them doing it. But I was doing my watch along, and people were going over there, and I wasn't like, don't do it, don't do it. I think it's an interesting concept, but Matt, our editor, you know, he said basically it's very easy, isn't it? You know, their watch along is watchers watching the game, whereas your watch along is watch the game with us.
Yeah.
And when you've got four ex players. It's all about them, isn't it? When I do it, it's me on my own interacting with people. So it's there's place for both. I think the thing that they did well, but was a bit cringe, was the, you know, I saw a lot of their reactions, and I just thought, I don't think that's the way they normally would watch a football game, you know, they're jumping on each other and stuff like that. It was almost like a little bit Hollyoaksy, but they've probably seen me doing it and they probably say the same sort of thing. So I don't know.
It's quite interesting at the moment, isn't it? I was like thinking about Sky again this morning just because of like Sky
Sports.
They're
the real losers.
Yeah. Like they actually like own nothing. Like they don't own the Premier League. They don't own the talent, and the talent are like going off and starting their own things, which are bigger. And like I saw the figures for like the Sky Sports news and everything and how that's
terrible.
Effective. Like they don't, they're, what's the word? Like they just report on news that's been already reported now, don't they? You don't tune into Sky Sports news for stuff now.
I think the way it's going, and we've spoken about this and I've spoken about it for a while, if you look at something like The Overlap, they've recruited people from Sky. They've probably got a lot of their brand relationships because Gary Neville and others have worked with Sky. They are effectively a mainstream outlet moving into this world. And what that means is if they can maintain those budgets, because what they pay...
Yeah.
What they're paying people like Carragher and even, you know, their guests, tens of thousands of pounds a show, like massive money. And if they can maintain those budgets and grow, they will end up with Premier League rights. So if I was Sky or BT, I'd be shitting myself because I'd be like, these people that we've basically given that audience to are now starting their own thing up. Some of the people who are at Sky and BT are going to work for them. It's very obvious what's happening, isn't it? It's like a restaurant that's done really, really well. And then the chef starts his own one and starts taking the waiter and the maitre d' and all this. And I think that's where we're heading. I'm quite comfortable with that because I said this on Wednesday. What I think about it is I've enjoyed doing this. You never know how long you've got doing it.
No.
And if it ends, I'll still like football. Would I like to watch football where it was what I grew up with? Where I was frustrated by the scripted nature of it, or would I rather watch football that's a little bit more like what we do here?
Yeah.
And if the mainstream are moving towards what we're doing, it's a bit of a win-win, really. But I think that's where it's heading. And I mean, God, I mean, you know, you had whoever was commentating on the United game on Saturday night, I think it was Alan Smith, was like, I don't see what Ugarte offers for Man United. And I'm like, he got man of the match on our player rating show. So it just shows you that, I think people want some more. People want honesty, even if it's a bad call. What they don't want is just laziness and you know people who aren't actually watching games and projecting their bias on it.
I think you have a lot of that with the EFL content because it's sort of like, especially from the Sky Sports stuff, it's almost like second nature. It's like, oh, who've we got on today? Right, let's get him and him in. Have you watched them? No. All right, they're ex-players that they can sort of do a job on that.
But how many of these pundits, like, you know, Tim Sherwood, Alan Smith, Paul Merson, you know.
I actually quite like Merson, actually.
But they're sort of synonymous with having the piss taken out of them, you know.
Yeah, well, no, I think Merson's done a bit of not a rebrand, but he's done well. But like, I think that the big one with, if you say you're, you know, WWE's going to Netflix.
Yeah.
Like when you actually zoom out of that, like they're going to, like everyone has a Netflix subscription. Mm. So if you're like a competitor league, like the EFL or League or someone like that, like if you go on to, so a World Right package, like you're going to be seen by so many more eyes on a Netflix, where like you only buy Sky for the Premier League. Mm. Like if they lost that, you wouldn't be like, oh,
100%.
League of Their Own or the Penguin.
Well, when I moved into my house, I was meant to get Sky installed the first day I moved in, because it's, you know, I'll tell you why in a minute. And thanks. I missed the appointment, so they couldn't get me in for another week and a half. And there was like games going to be on for like watch-alongs. And that's why we did one in here, me and Noel, because it was like, yeah. It was like, if you watch it off a stream, you know, you could pay good money, but if you watch Now TV or Sky Stream or anything like that, it's actually up to 30 seconds slower than having a cable or a satellite dish. So for me, the only reason I have Sky or Virgin is because I know that's the best way to watch UK interactively close to what the kickoff time is.
Yeah.
You can get Discovery Plus for your Champions League. You can get Amazon Prime, etc., when they've got it on. The only problem with that at the moment is that it's a little bit slower. Yeah. But ultimately, if Sky or TNT don't, that's their selling point. It's not really Monday Night Football or anything like that, which is probably one of their better shows.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Sky have taken their eye off the ball in relation to how it's like Lineker, isn't it? Yeah. With the rest
BBC,
is football.
Yeah.
His match of the day is why he's popular. He started the rest is football. Neville was known for Sky. He started overlap. They've basically taken that relationship, started something else, and you can see what's going to happen. And you know, that's evolution. I've got nothing against Lineker and Neville for doing that. But Sky and TNT are just stupid. They're almost going, let's use them because they're popular, even though they're absolutely taking our audience. Yeah.
But even like you look at Lineker, like the way the industry's changed, I think COVID was such a big thing with that, is like the accessibility to do it. Like think how professional your setup is at home, and in the realm of TV production, probably quite low cost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas like, and Lineker and Shearer and Micah are doing their podcast to millions of people per week.
Mm.
From remotely using AirPods.
Yeah.
And it's like, you look at Sky Sports and like, you know, when I think Solly or Moore's had the TV down here, didn't they? Like, it must cost tens of thousands of pounds to put on a game. And the biggest thing TV do of this sort of cloak and veil over the actual numbers, because I think like another league came out and it was like 4,000 people were watching a game. And to be honest, probably less.
Well, when we did that Charlton watch along at Charlton.
Yeah.
That had way more views than anything League One's ever done.
That's why I think the EFL can be a lot more. Like, why wouldn't they go to an Amazon Prime? But, you know, I just don't think they're getting.
Well, Bundesliga gets put up free on YouTube, didn't it? I saw that.
That was Sky, to be fair, putting that on the right. But I think there's
so many. Well, have some people watching it.
There's so many better ways you can do a TV deal, isn't there, going forward?
Yeah. Anyway, talking about watching it, I was right again.
Oh, shit.
Fulham, quintessential Premier League side. Crystal Palace, a tough place to go. I've been saying for weeks, the best place to go in the Premier League is Brentford at home.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They have absolutely smashed it. They've scored more goals than any other team at home in the Premier League this season. I think they've scored 9 more goals than their closest, I think, Liverpool. They're top of the league for home form. They're bottom of the league for away form. But look, let's slide on the away form. Unbelievable home form. We're nearly at Christmas. And
they're top at Christmas.
They're beating so many teams at home. It's unbelievable. What do we put this down to?
I think Tony
as well.
I think it's a bit of naivety on our part. It's a bit of the Brighton effect, isn't it? Like, you don't know the players, so sometimes you write them off. Like, Mbeumo's coming. Like, the goal that he scored, Vissa scored, technically absolutely unbelievable. Like, Nathan Collins popping up from the back doing his job. Thomas Frank, a wonderful manager, just accentuating the positive, hide the negatives. A really good team.
And I think they're, I don't know whether you've got the league table, but I think
certainly
Brentford are high up in the league now. And it was a weird weekend, actually. It's so congested, isn't it?
Yeah.
From like fifth to probably, you know, 12th or something. But
You're
not
13th.
United, get there then. But the point is, Villa were going through a really bad patch. They win 2 games in a week, and I think they were up to sixth.
Yeah, they're sixth now. Same point as Forest.
Just crazy. Brighton. Three good fixtures,
and
they take, was it 1 from 9 or 2 from 9?
One, they've drawn, lost, and drew.
Yeah, two from.
They need to play Man City every week or Liverpool because
I mean, Brighton aren't in Europe. You've got Southampton at home, Leicester away, and Fulham away.
And they were 2-0 up against Leicester.
And you think take six, they take two. So that's they've dropped like a stone.
What about Bournemouth? Rude?
Bournemouth beat Ipswich.
Last minute winners. Terrible defending again.
1-0 Ipswich. How many times have Ipswich been in a good position in the 85th minute?
And then did you see the? It wasn't. It didn't end up being a goal actually, but there was a Southampton.
Playing out from the back.
Oh, God.
It's Will's hate.
It's like, oh, God. They didn't even score from it, but it was absolutely cataclysmic. The one, was it Chelsea they were playing? Was it midweek they played Chelsea, wasn't it?
Smashed, didn't they?
Oh. Minute silence for them, please. But, like, it ties into the Russell Martin. Like, they are on par to go down with that Derby County side.
Who did Southampton play?
Southampton at the Villa at the weekend.
Yeah, there was one. Was it 1-0?
1-0, Duran.
I looked at it with about 10 minutes to go, and Southampton had more possession than Villa. I think they had like no shots. And I'm like, this has happened so many times. What do they do? Do they just pass side to side around the back? Like, they don't create anything.
But, and that's the thing. Like, I know we brought it up a couple of weeks ago about this sort of Vincent Kompany at Burnley, Russell Martin effect. Like, but if I'd just be pulling my hair out if I was a Southampton fan, because he is putting himself above the club. Like, he'll get a job at, like, he'll be the next Brighton manager, won't he? Hertzler will go on to bigger things and he'll end up at Brighton. But what does that mean for Southampton fans who are going to go down, possibly one of the worst points totals ever in Premier League history, and with the side just refusing to be pragmatic when it doesn't work? They've got Joe Lumley, not the absolutely fabulous star, in goal now because Ramsdale's injured. He's out of his depth trying to do it. You can see it all the time. It's just like,
I think with Russell Martin, it's a bit like, you know, you're on holiday. He's been given a yacht. He takes like three or four families there. I know how to drive this yacht. He's never driven the yacht before. He's driven a fucking dinghy in the Championship. Drives the yacht straight into a bloody big rock. You're about 200 metres out from sea and you're sinking and no one can swim. He's crashed the fucking yacht. Yeah. And then what he does, I'm an Olympic swimmer. So he's swimming with people on his back to shore. So he saves everybody, but he crashed the fucking yacht in the first place. Yeah. And everyone goes, hero. Yeah. He's an absolute hero. He saved everyone. And then some people are going, he crashed the fucking yacht.
Yeah.
So he's got himself a bravery award and he caused it.
Yes.
And that's exactly what's happening.
That's very good, that. But like, I read that, and I sort of got where he's coming from, because like, you, there's a world where he has to almost do what he's doing for some people and for his career and for British managers to proceed. But like, what's going to be worse? People think, well, how are people going to think of this Southampton side next season? Oh, remember at Villa when they had 74% possession? No, they finished the season with 6 points. Oh, right. Yeah, shit.
What do you think? I mean, I've always said three up, three down. I think Ipswich. Ipswich have played a lot of the teams at Portman Road where they needed points, and Bournemouth was another one. So I think Ipswich.
Hey, Leicester are out of it at the moment, mate.
Admirable mention. But Leicester, Rude 4 points from six.
I think
Leicester have got a chance. I don't know. I don't want to jinx Leicester. They'll be going, Goldbridge, no, relegators. But I think Leicester have got a chance. And you look at Wolves.
Oh.
Tonight.
Oh.
Again. Well, you did say it.
El Sacchio.
Yeah. I think it is El Sacchio. I think if Gary O'Neill loses tonight.
0-0 draw.
You've got to go. Is
Gary
that fair
O'Neill
to say?
No, I think if Lopetegui loses 100%,
he's
got to go.
Yeah, but Wolves are in the bottom three.
No, I know. Yeah, but I think, like, Wolves are going to be fighting for relegation, whatever happened. I think I had them in 18th. You laughed at me. You're not laughing now.
No, they're massively underperforming. That team's better than
that. You can't be below Leicester City and you can't be below Crystal Palace, yet they are. You can't lose 4-0 to Everton. You can't do that. So, yeah, tonight is the night. But then again, like, I don't think Potter's going to go there. He seems very shrewd of like where he's going to do next, the jobs he's turned down. Leicester have got a new manager. Let's see if they can have this continued effect going forward. I like Rude. I like what he's doing. He's unleashed Jamie Vardy, which I think seems like a break when emergency, but like, Jamie Vardy knows what to do. Like, the goal, was it in the midweek? He just hassled the defender. I think they scored after that, scored and assisted at the weekend.
Probably get a bit of money in January as well.
Also,
I think Leicester have got a great chance now.
They were heavily linked with the points deduction, and I don't know what's happened to that.
I think it got swept under the carpet. I'm not sure.
Rude.
But West Ham, I think they will beat Wolves, and I think Gary O'Neill's in big trouble. But for West Ham, Lopetegui really should be under threat. But I was going to say, the Antonio thing, I think Fulkrug's struggled and he's injured. Antonio you know what you're getting with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And
a bit like
well, you don't know what you're getting
it?
Now because we don't know what the situation is. Obviously, we were talking about this before, but I was on That's Football at the weekend. The statement came out from West Ham, thoughts and prayers with Antonio, hours after what looked like a horrific accident. Many footballers, Marcus Rashford had a crash after a match last season, and the club didn't really say anything about it because it was quite minor. So I think the statement in itself, I said at the weekend, Will, there's obviously something significant there for them to be saying thoughts and prayers. It doesn't look like it's life-threatening. We hope it isn't anyway, because apparently he has been talking. But there is obviously going to be rumour, and that rumour could be that, you know, serious accident, serious damage to, you know, legs or something like that would could be a massive problem for West Ham in the short term in a footballing sense, which obviously is massively secondary to the welfare of the player.
Yeah.
West Ham would have to probably go into the transfer market in January. I don't know whether the money's there to do that. And I just think longer term, Lopetegui, it's a problem, isn't it? It's the sort of time you need David Moyes to sort of grind out some results.
Yeah, you need to be defensively sound, don't you? We sort of highlighted Max Kilman, who's going up against his former club tonight, of like how some of the mistakes he'd made, like, and that's going across the back four into the midfield. Like ironically, they tried to play this new football. It feels like in the recent weeks, their best player again has been Thomas Souček, who's been scoring headers from set pieces and getting in and around the box. So, again, they sort of tie into the Tottenham effect for me. It's like they want more, but in reality, if they're not going to spend the money, which they can't, what are you ever going to achieve? So relax.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've just about covered everybody in the Premier League there. I can't think of any game that we didn't talk about.
Eddie Howe, we touched on Brentford, but Eddie Howe, for me,
up and down.
A lot of pressure going on there.
I think the Liverpool draw helped him out, but...
But that he's always got a Liverpool draw in him, hasn't he? He's got a Manchester City win at home. I think it's those games where... They're up against it, especially at Brentford.
I think with Newcastle,
who have they got next?
They're
Leicester City.
They're just they're almost becoming Fulham, aren't they? The quintessential sort of could win, could lose. But the competitive nature of this Premier League, there's nowhere to hide, and I think that's why the Man Uniteds and the Spurs have struggled, is because you can't just glide through a couple of games and then, you know, work hard in one game. Every week it's a tough game, unless you're playing Southampton at home or even away. Every game's a challenge. Even Ipswich will give you a game. So
I wonder if they'll go back for Dan Ashworth, because from all intents and purposes, the Paul Mitchell relationship's not been working with Eddie Howe. And also,
I don't think they'd go anywhere near him, though, would they? Because I think that will have ended very, very badly.
Yeah, but you've probably been given the money to get him back. You've probably probably gone away for 4 months, and then you've made money on him, and he comes back and carries on his job.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Poor old Dan Ashworth. They're a bit like Tottenham as well, because they obviously need to get the trophy, and they've got Brentford in the Carabao Cup quarterfinal.
What do you mean, poor old Dan Ashworth? If it's true that he muttered the words Gareth Southgate at any point in the last 6 months, that's sackable.
That was, you know, we were coming in on a weekly basis, and I think some people generally thought I was just pulling out my arse, but those reports that came out that he favoured Gareth Southgate.
100% true.
I tell you what, everyone talks
that
about...
That is sackable, that is.
Why?
Because it's just absolutely clueless.
You don't know how good he'd have been.
Well, I want Southgate to get a job in the Premier League anywhere but Man United, so we can all just go... Someone was mentioning him the other day for a job.
Palace?
No, it wasn't Palace.
Wolves?
No, it wasn't Wolves.
I wonder what he thinks, where he could
Spurs.
Get yeah, do a good job.
I'd love that. I tell you what, Spurs have suffered enough. No. They don't need that.
Eddie Howe, Unai Emery, Southampton, Brentford... Graham Potter. Oh, the FIFA Pro wanted to do a little TikTok thing with you quickly, actually. The best nominees for the FIFA men's best football player this year have come out.
And is that not the Ballon d'Or?
No, because FIFA stopped endorsing the Ballon d'Or, didn't they? D'Or is just the Ballon d'Or.
Okay.
So it's winner stays on. Jude Bellingham or Danny Carvajal? Jude Bellingham or Erling Haaland? Jude Bellingham or Toni Kroos? Jude Bellingham or Kylian Mbappe? Jude Bellingham or Lionel Messi? Jude Bellingham or Rodri? Rodri or Valverde?
Rodri
or Florian Wirtz?
Rodri
or Lamine Yamal?
Good one, still Rodri.
Rodri or Vinicius Jr.?
Easy, Vinicius Jr.
Yeah,
cash back. money. That's a good one, that.
Yeah, thanks.
Three.
And that's the FIFA Best Men's Player of the Year.
The real Ballon d'Or winner.
Exactly. EFL Watch, Sunderland beat Stoke City 2-1. Tom Watson scored two goals. Not the guy. Was it Tom Watson who did the... No, I've got the name
Harry
wrong.
Potter? No, I don't know.
No, who's the guy that walked around the garden?
Tom. Major Tom.
Is he a Watson?
Don't know.
Anyway.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Millwall. Great cause. Not a great time.
That got knocked down the spa, didn't they, that she built?
Did it?
Yeah.
What, by the wind?
No. She should probably say it's by the wind. Insurance, cash back. Millwall 0, Coventry 1. Frank Lampard first win away from home.
Oh, yeah, I forgot my Coventry with my team.
Yeah.
Super. Bring back Mark Robbins.
Barnsley 1, Birmingham City 2. Lincoln 0, Charlton 0. Notts County
postponed.
Winded. Doncaster 2, Cheltenham 2. Moors lost. Thanks. Good weekend. We're back next Monday. We're also filming a Christmas
quiz.
Special.
Yeah, looking
quiz,
forward to that.
Which Noel's doing.
Which will exclusively be for podcast listeners. So if you are watching on YouTube, make sure you're getting on to Spotify for the Goldbridge Saves Football podcast, because our Christmas quiz will be on there.
What Christmas film are you going to watch this week? Anyone's you're prioritising?
Let us know in the comments and on Spotify what Christmas films you've already watched. Niall watched Love Actually with his... He's laughing already. You'll be laughing, don't worry. Love Actually is a romantic Christmas film you can watch with a loved one. Sex scenes in it as well. Niall certainly did it with a loved one. his mother.
Yeah.
No, he watched the film with her. Didn't do that.
Prioritised to watch it.
Yeah, we wouldn't employ anyone like that here. We'd do our checks.
He said, can we please watch it, mother? It's my favourite.
No, he went round and she was watching it and he sat and watched it with her.
Oh,
lovely
that.
Stuff. No. I watched Die Hard a bit early this year.
Not
but
done Die Hard, ever.
I watched it on Saturday night. I normally watch it on Christmas Eve, but you know it's busy on Christmas Eve, wrapping presents, etc. So by the time I get it on, it's probably about 11 o'clock, knackered. And I've been having this game for the last 3 years. How far in the film can I get before I sleep?
No, nice.
And it's normally when he's going down the lift shaft. Today, the weekend, I watched all of it. So I've done Die Hard. I watched Click and Collect, which isn't a film, which is quite good.
Oh, no, watch that. That's
on Amazon
Chaldi
Prime.
And
Stephen Merchant. Very, very funny. And started watching that Last Christmas with Seb on Netflix.
Nice.
He did loads.
We started early because we're going back home earlier. So we've done Elf already. That's up there for me. Home Alone 2, I'm actually saying, is better than Home Alone 1.
Oh, dear. This is a guy that hasn't seen Goodfellas.
I have watched it on the plane, didn't I?
Yeah, last week. I've watched it 100 times. No, Home Alone is better than Home Alone 2.
No, I think Home Alone 2 takes all the best bits of Home Alone and then gets the setting of New York.
Sequels that are better than the original. He's saying Home Alone 2.
Toy Story 2 is better than Toy Story 1.
Oh, don't watch that shit.
What? You're saying watch that shit. It's a great Pixar movie.
Empire Strikes Back. Dark Knight, maybe.
Tron. Tron's better than
Godfather
the original.
Godfather
2. No, just better than the original.
Sequels, yeah. I'm going to watch The Holiday this week, I think.
Good Holiday. Although Jack Black, this is probably the 10th time I've watched on it. His role actually did start to grind on me.
Yeah, he is.
There was in that clip.
He's
where,
too happy.
Yeah, he's
You know, off camera. Well, not off camera because he's acting, but in real life, that guy. Oh, hey, everybody. Oh, you're so great. And then when he gets in his house and closes the door.
Yeah. Milk.
Milk. Yeah, he's got a milk fetish.
And rips. I bet he rip farts like Gary Oldman
he's
in
too
Slow
happy.
Horses.
You know the girl he's with before Kate Winslet, who's clearly having an affair?
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, oh, I don't care if you're getting it up the ass. I'll clean it with my tongue. Anyway, the point is, it's not just about films at Christmas. There are specials. The Snowman.
Snowman. Oh, my
the music to that. Do, 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 do.
I really like, you know, the same animation, Father Christmas.
Yeah. Raymond Briggs.
Blooming Christmas.
Mel Smith.
We got Wallace and Gromit Christmas Day.
I hope it's Christmassy.
Favourite comedy special Christmas?
Well, Only Fools and Horses normally, but I do like The Office Christmas specials, and I love Father Ted's Christmas special. Very good.
That's my favourite. That's like four episodes in one.
I have to watch that every Christmas, especially when you've got to watch it at night.
Yeah.
Lovely film.
Anyone got a boring voice?
There you go. You didn't have to watch that last bit if you miserable, but we like to bring that sort of stuff into the podcast as well. Fantastic. Everybody who is listening to it on, you can listen to it on
your Super Chats. Robert McCormack says, Salah this season, Palmer better last season. Thank you very much for your continued support. Daniel Sturtridge, thank you for your continued support. He says, Argyle fan here, happy about Mike Phelan. That's a very sad sentence, unfortunately, but have a great Christmas. And Toby Ronson says, Will, you made me watch The Last Dance again. So good. Toby, thanks for that.
I'd love to watch that again.
I need to finish it off.
Brilliant.
Lovely stuff.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Make sure you smash a like on video. Subscribe if you're on YouTube. Give us a comment as well. Lots to get involved in. Absolutely brilliant. And we will be speaking to you next week as well. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Will.
Thanks to Mark.
Bye-bye.